Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Now, my next guest has had an incredible career getting to the top of her game in the tech world to ticking off a lifelong ambition of sailing the world. Aisling Hassel returned to Dublin to retire, but on a beach walk with her husband, she said, "This can't just be it," and decided it was time for another venture, a wellness centre called DEA, which launched this year. And Aisling joins me in studio now. Aisling, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much. Great to be here, Claire.
Now, we know each other. The wellness centre, thankfully, that you've opened is literally on my doorstep. But you told your story recently in Life magazine, and I thought people need to hear it because it's pretty incredible. So, Aisling, did you always have a career plan? Did you always see yourself ending up in the C-suites of the tech world as you did?
No, I would say I didn't have a concrete plan. So I did mechanical engineering in Trinity, mechanical manufacturing engineering, and then I did a master's in fluid dynamics. And after that, I really decided academia probably wasn't the path I wanted to go on. So I took my first job, which was a sort of a strange one for an engineer. Was sort of editor of an engineering database for a US company, and it was their first sort of location outside of the US. So that launched me into basically a career of management, because I went straight into managing a team of 23 and sort of a baptism of fire, really, straight from college. But and from there, I just, you know, I moved into the tech world with Symantec, and, you know, I didn't have a plan like where it would end up. But I suppose I did the Barack Obama sort of method of just get stuff done. And so became very collaborative and very sort of focused executive, if you like. And through that, you know, I suppose I always put my hand up for opportunities. So there was an opportunity to go to LA at an early point in Symantec. And I took that, went to LA. And the fact that I was sort of in the US and close to headquarters, which was in Cupertino, which is about an hour's flight away, just meant I could see more opportunities and I was more visible. So I took all those opportunities and then sort of migrated from, you know, I suppose manager level to director to VP. And then at some point decided I want to come back to Europe and took some jobs, took a job in the UK, actually, in this kind of semi-migration back with my husband and our kids. And then, you know, took a job, I took a riskier move, moving to Airbnb, which was my last gig. And that was riskier because it was a very new startup. I hadn't really worked in the startup world before, but it was an awesome opportunity to see a company grow from the grassroots, really, and to build a team from basically the ground up. So no, there was not a plan, but I suppose just kind of a built on reputation.
Over the years, have you noticed, particularly working in a startup, is there more of an emphasis on workplace well-being?
Oh, I think so. And I think it's probably not just isolated to startups now. You know, I think every firm is realizing that looking after people's well-being is good for the firm and it's good for everybody that's in the firm. So, you know, I see it in lots of business, not just startup. Now, I will say, you know, in tech startup, you are very much nurtured and looked after, you know, whether that's nutrition. You know, the founders of Airbnb were very big on diet. And so they had a dedicated food program, which they personally, you know, curated and made sure that the diet that people were eating was healthy and sustainable and locally produced, etc. And then, you know, in terms of well-being, yes, you know, I think so many firms now are supporting well-being by either sponsoring membership to clubs or, you know, we had, you know, a therapist who came in, I think twice a week. You could sign up for, you know, a neck massage or a back massage to combat, you know, everyone's shoulders that are up around their ears. And so, yes, I do think there is focus, but I think it's getting broader than just the startup world. I think tech kind of set the bar early, but I'm happy to say that I'd see it much more pervasively now.
So when did this sailing and crewing go from being something you did as a hobby to something you decided you wanted to ramp up to the maximum?
Well, I think it was a two-step process. So I think going back to the career. So at Symantec, I was a VP. I was doing a very challenging program, which was to unite about 10 other sort of sections of the company around a commerce lifecycle, which was basically about redesigning the way we went to market to service customers. And so that was quite a large undertaking. So I did that program and basically got all the agreement. I think it was like a $13 billion program, just to put in context. And at the time, then I was asked, would I lead it? Like, would I run it? And I was like, oh gosh, no, that is not what I want to do. So I actually took a career break then. And, you know, sailing, as I said, had always been my outlet. And I had this in the, like, I do background process a lot of things, you know, like there'd be noodling there and I would talk about them. And I always thought, like, oh, wouldn't it be fun to sail across the Pacific, you know? So my first foray was I took a career break and my husband very generously offered to mind the house and our son and pay the bills while I went off and sailed from, at that time, Florida to Tahiti. And he joined us along the way. That just kind of really just re-energized me. You know, people worry about taking career breaks, but I was a far better person. That was 6 months, basically. Far better person when I came back off that trip. And so that kind of showed me, like, yeah, you can take career breaks and it's okay and, you know, it's all good.
And you can say no. I really like that. Was a massive opportunity and they obviously had faith in you to do it based on your performance. Mm-hmm. But you kind of said, no, you know, I don't necessarily need to take that step. That's not the right one for me. And no is not an easy word to say.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, especially those women are more inclined to say yes all the time to any opportunities. And to be honest, like I did put my hand up a lot previously. And I suppose you get a bit of wisdom from doing that. So, you know, I had, like I said, I had one where I put my hand up to join a startup within the bigger company, which, you know, I would never do again. It was an absolute nightmare. And that didn't work out too well for me, you know. But when this came along, I think you need to listen to your intuition, because my intuition was, I am not going to enjoy this one iota. I knew I could do it and I knew, you know, it would be a great success. And I'm sure, you know, I don't know, maybe more success would have followed that. But I was just like, no, it's not for me. So I do think you have to listen to, you know, what your body and your mind is telling you when these things come up and say, sometimes the fear can take over. So even as you're listening to yourself, there's always a little voice that goes, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. That's too risky. But I think you kind of know in your heart of hearts, and you do need a support network, you know. So like, for example, you know, in any of those decisions, it's good to have somebody to bounce them off, you know, and certainly I've been lucky to have that support, just to say, am I mad or should I do this? And, you know, and just get a little nudge.
Back to Dublin, mm-hmm. and Howth you came. And tell us about that beach walk then, where you thought, retirement, I don't know if I can do this.
Well, so we were back and we had finished the trip and we, you know, as I said, we live in Howth, so and we had a dog, Sully. So it would be quite frequent, you know, practice to kind of take the dog out, walk up to the village, have a coffee. And that, it's a lovely thing to do. Like, we're very fortunate to be able to do it, like, as often as we like. But when we were, my husband retired at the same time. So I retired September 2020 before the sailing trip, and so did my husband. So we came back from the sailing trip. And when you're doing one of those trips, like, it's full on. Like, there's not an awful lot else you can take on to occupy your mind. But it's very absorbing, which is great. So we came off that, and we were, you know, sit in the house by sort of some empty nesters at this point, because our son had gone to college and Hannah had got married and was living in Malahide. So we spent a lot of time together, which wasn't new because we had been on a boat, like, in, you know.
And survived.
10 square meters. Yeah, I know. Actually got on really well. So that was all fine. But we were walking on the beach. I think, like you're saying, was probably day 5 doing it in a row and, like, walking down. And it's kind of the same conversation every time, you know, look at those apartments and, oh, wow, look at the beach. And that's what I turned to Darren. I said, well, this can't be it. And in the background, I had been noodling this concept around wellness, which I had, you know, talked ad nauseum, I suppose, over the years while I was working still. Like, oh, wouldn't it be great to have somewhere that you could go to that did this? And the operational head of me was always kind of thinking I could do it better and how would I design it? And, you know, if I was going to do it. So that's kind of had been background processing, and then just, you know, really put my, decided I was going to really do the full on effort to get it up and going. And that's what, as you said, brought it to fruition, like opening and launching towards the end of last year and this beginning of this year.
So it's called Daya, which mm-hmm. is a culmination of all the names in your family.
Mm-hmm.
And what is its concept?
Yeah, the concept for DEA was really born out of the challenges I faced, and I think everyone faces, in trying to nurture your wellness. So, you know, when I came back from the States, you know, you would say, oh, where could you get a good massage, or where would you go for yoga? And it's all word of mouth, or, you know, is there a good reflexologist, or where'd you get acupuncture? And so it was all this word of mouth and trying to get bookings with people like over WhatsApp, etc. And I was like, gosh, it's really hard, you know. And so the concept is really that we would bring all the modalities for well-being under one roof and create this haven at the heart of a community to do a couple of things. One, to teach people about well-being, to nurture their well-being, and really to inspire them to kind of live happier and longer lives. So we have, you know, the concept then that evolved into, you know, the purpose of the brand is really to transform lives. So the other observation I had just from my practice, both in the US, honestly, and here, is that it can be quite transactional. Like, you can dip into an expert or a therapist and you dip out and it's like you're kind of been and gone, you know. And I just felt it was important. Like, wellness shouldn't be occasional. Like, it should be part of our day-to-day, you know, life, really. And how do we make that easier? So that's where, you know, we want to transform lives by being there constantly for people, no matter where they are in their wellness journey. So we have everything from treatments, and the treatments span east-west treatments. So we have everything from acupuncture to Reiki, reflexology, massages, to classes. And so movement is one of our pillars of wellness. And so movement is so important for your ongoing wellness. So we do everything, again, east-west, Tai Chi to Pilates to Barre and yoga. And then in terms of teaching and inspiring, we can turn the studio into an event space, really. And so that means we can do events and talks. We did a great talk last night on endometriosis. So it's just a part of that education to the community. And then we do consultations. So I think a bit like yourself, and because of my background in tech, I'm very data driven. You know, I think being informed is a good thing. Not to agonize over the data, but really to kind of know where you're at. So the consultations are all aimed at giving you a benchmark on where you're at. And they span like sleep health, gut health, and also fitness age, which is basically getting markers of how you are doing on your strength, your mobility, your body composition, and most importantly, your VO2 max. And so all of that is really to inform you about where you're at, really, and with a goal that then you can go and either, you know, improve where your benchmark is through nutrition, through exercise, or through other, you know, through supplements or other means that, you know, we would help you kind of figure out. So that's the concept. And so far, so good. Been really well received.
Well, you have transformed the old bank. It's gone from somewhere we would grumble and queue to somewhere, as you say, we can emerge more relaxed. And I hope it does grow and more people can get access to it. If you want to find out more information, you can go to deawellness.com. It's spelled D-A-H-A, deawellness.com. Aisling Hassel, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Claire.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.